we present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a clipping from the Milton Keynes Herald, read by Peter Donaldson.
Dr. Brian Mawinney met some local travellers this week. Earlier in the day, he visited the new secure unit at Woodhill Prison and met members of the Bletchley Conservative Club.
Thanks to A.P. Duckworth of Milton Keynes for that. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome, please, first on my right, Francis Ween and Jeremy Hardy. Tackling them on my left, Alan Corran and Nick Clark. Francis, where was fudge a main course at the weekend?
Oh, this is a thrilling story. It's about a Dutch banker, a man in a suit called Wim Duisenberg, I believe, and he is going to be the first head of the Euro, the new European Central Bank, and he was going to do it for 8 years, but now he's decided he'll stand down after 4 years. The audience are on the edge of their seats already. I mean, so excited. And give way to a French banker in a suit called Jean-Claude Trichet, who is then going to carry on for another 8 years. What we have to do is give credit to Tony Blair, especially as it's his birthday this week. He's pulled it off again. And he brings together Republicans and loyalists in Northern Ireland, Netanyahu and Arafat, French and the Germans. And did you see the other day, he's even persuaded Gordon Brown to speak to Peter Mandelson after 2 years of total silence. There's nothing that man can't do.
The latest news on this story, of course, is that Mr. Duisenberg has agreed to do this now, apparently said he may not step down after 4 years and he may continue for 8, which is good news for all of us in my side of the business and Mr. Donaldson's side of the business, because by then we may have decided how to pronounce his name.
I know, because I've got cousins in Holland. You're interested, aren't you? I can tell. No, they're exciting people who cycle a lot. Not physically attractive, but keen. And since they're below sea level, you can't ask too much. Duisenberg. Berg, rather than Berg. The trouble with Dutch is you can't speak it without hurting yourself.
Or wearing a Mac.
It was the Euro summit in Brussels, where prolonged wrangling between the French and the Germans meant that Wim Duisenberg of the Netherlands was only 4 years as head of the new European Central Bank. The German delegation in Brussels complained that no matter how hard they push, the French refused to give an inch of ground, proving they've learned something since 1941. As part of the fudge, Mr. Duisenberg confirmed that he would be stepping down as president of the European Bank early for personal reasons, the details of which will be thrashed out at another Euro summit in June. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, which bachelor boyo was the single worst possible candidate?
This is a reference to Redwood, according to somebody else, calling the Hague camp, and I use the word camp advisedly, being bachelor boys. He was petrified of the Welsh as well. If anyone remembers that marvellous clip of Redwood being forced to sing the Welsh national anthem and not knowing, surrounded by Welsh people, and he was an absolute terror, a look of horror on his face, saying, "Take my wallet and don't hurt me." But Redwood hates everybody else in the Tory party. And he hates Lilly, and he hates Portillo, and he hates Hague. And it's right that they should all hate each other, because we all hate them, after all. Not only collectively, but each in his own individual way. They've all got their own loathsome peculiarities. But it's good that they pop up, because you forget about the Tories, don't you? They pop, you think, oh, God, because one or two of them got back in, didn't they?
You are going to use that wonderful phrase, aren't you, that Redwood is said to have used about Mr. Hague?
Well,
very old baby.
Yeah. Well, we're all very old babies.
With the vacuity of a train spotter.
Yes.
Civil war within the Tory party has now reached such alarming proportions they've asked Tony Blair to intervene. The attack on Mr. Hague as looking like a very old baby was surprising, since physical looks are not Mr. Redwood's strongest point either. Let's face it, in the handsome Tory minister stakes, he's not exactly David Mellor. Two points there. Nick, who made history sharing a platform with the man he consigned to history?
Well, I think this is a rather fine moment. What happened was that they looked all the way through number 10 Downing Street until they found the name of the previous occupant, because everyone had forgotten what it was. And they discovered this yellowing piece of paper, known manufacturer as Major, and everyone thought, Major, that's the man. And they brought him along and stood him on the platform with Mr. Blair, and they said what a good thing it would be if Northern Ireland said yes.
It's like bringing Jeremy Bentham out at the Royal Society. You know, he's stuffed. They wheel him out for 200... Major was hardly alive. They brought him down and put him in this chair, and you were moved.
I don't know why he's brought Major into his Major very nearly cocked it up. It was only because Tony Blair was so flexible about the conditions that they managed to move the thing at all. I mean, he ended up just saying, all right, so you can come in as long as you don't point it at me.
In a key move, Irish nationalists have backed a yes vote. If Britain withdraws troops from Ireland, they've promised that Sumter will stay dead. Alan, a piece of music for you.
Have you seen the old man in the closed-down market kicking up the papers with his worn-out shoes? In his eyes you see no pride, hand held loosely by his side. Yesterday's paper telling yesterday's news.
Alan, where was XYZ or even a smiley face okay to mark the spot?
It's about today's or yesterday's referendum, whether London ought to have a mayor, and a lot of other stuff that I could hardly focus my eyes on in this tiny, awful booth that always feels as though someone's going to drill a hole in the wall so you can see women taking their clothes off on the other side. It was really like that in Cricklewood. They have to fill the holes in so we can vote. Apparently it doesn't matter whether you deface the paper or not. You can say yes or no or put anything, put Mr. Smiley down.
Well, what happens if you put by the yes box, you put, no, I don't want a mayor for London? I mean...
It's a sort of tacit endorsement of art, isn't it? You give someone a piece of paper, they can write anything they like on it, and it gets published and people make millions of pounds. It's a sort of metaphor for the mayoralty lying underneath it.
He knocked me over yesterday, Geoffrey Archer, at a party, and Rupert Murdoch was standing, literally, I couldn't believe it, it was at the London Aquarium. Yes. There were all these enormous sharks, literally, swimming around in the tank, and there, looking at them, was Rupert Murdoch. And they were all swimming towards him, saying, Daddy! This is true. Suddenly, Archer is there. Charlie sends me spinning round, and there's Mrs. Archer, the fragrant one, who says, hello, goodbye.
And then you woke up and it was all a dream.
Observers say it's wrong that the race to become London's mayor has turned into a beauty contest, as that's going to put Steve Norris at a severe disadvantage in the swimsuit round. Even Dame Barbara Cartland is backing a yes vote, saying she fondly remembers some magnificent mayoral balls she enjoyed back in the 1930s. And the scores at the end of round one, everybody, 4 points. Francis, who leaves the line sooner than expected?
Jeremy knows this.
What? What was the question again? It's that
who leaves the... Someone retiring early.
They've got a lefty in it, Aslef.
Yes.
Hooray!
Oh, that one, yes.
And there's going to be proper rail strikes again, like we used to have. Because... lately, they just have one-day strikes, and you can't have a class struggle on flexi-time. So it's going to be good again, like when I was a lad, in the great days of steam and industrial action.
It was the defeat of the General Secretary of the Aslef Train Drivers Union, Lou Adams, by the ultra-left hardliner Dave Ricks. Mr. Adams says he's sickened by the sudden shift to the left, so at least he knows now what intercity passengers feel when they take a corner at 90 miles an hour. Industry insiders claim that Mr. Ricks' victory means that passengers can look forward to months of delays, rail chaos and cancellations, though people using Virgin trains won't notice much difference. Jeremy, who got needled for documenting a fake trip?
Oh, this is the weird thing, the documentary that wasn't true. But nothing's true on the telly. Do you know what? When you see interviews on the telly, now ordinary members of the public who are not media godfigures like us wouldn't realise this. When you see an interview on the television, they cut the interviewer nodding, which is called a noddy. And what's happened is that the interviewee has actually left, leaving the camera person sitting in that person's seat, filming the interviewer doing a noddy. And if you walk past Westminster about 5 o'clock, there are all these interviewers from the telly programmes just nodding at cameras and no politicians in sight because they've all gone. And everything's pretend. And you know on nature programmes, when the camera appears to be underground and there's like an Arctic fox or a meerkat or a swan or something tunnelling into the ground, into the sand, what's happened is they've not buried the camera, they've got a glass case and they've caught the beastie and shoved it down the hole to film it. And likewise with this drugs thing, it was actually a play and they got confused with the listings and they called it a documentary or something.
Well, it was called A Connection, wasn't it? Yes, and it was all filmed in the producer's backyard in Cricklewood, probably, for all I know, instead of in Colombia, because it was safer. And... It was slightly safer, I should say.
The question concerned the Carlton documentary programme The Connection. The makers claimed to have penetrated a Colombian drugs cartel, but it was alleged this week that much of the programme was faked. The filmmakers insist that the fact that the alleged smuggler's journey to Britain took 6 months doesn't prove that it was faked, merely that he shouldn't have booked with Air Tours. Nick, here's a piece of music for you to listen to. Nick, whose journey to the palace was a gas?
Wouldn't it be Her Majesty the Queen, would it, by any chance? She entered a taxi cab for a journey to the palace in order to demonstrate her commitment to clean fuel. And it's been said, therefore, that she's now done everything that any common person could ever have done. But I've never seen her rolling a cigarette. I've never seen her on a bus. I've never seen her go into a public convenience. And I've never seen her emptying her own dustbins. But otherwise, she's done the lot.
But it wasn't much of a journey, because the cab picked her up round the back of the palace by the Royal Mews and drove her round to her front door. If it had been a minicab, they would have gone by a crouch end. But...
It's Prince Philip's cab, isn't it? It's not even a real taxi. It's a play cab. He drives around London in a taxi.
He's a cab driver monkey, isn't he, really? So if she travels in his cab, he'd be leaning over the partition and say, and another thing, those Chinese.
The this thing runs on methane. The entire Royal Mews have been converted. All the cars now run on this on tiny farts from very small animals. This is true, absolutely true. And this is what they were proving, not that she got in a cab, but she actually got in something that was consumer-friendly. Smelt a bit odd. The driver probably said, don't worry about it, ma'am, they'll think it's one of the horses. But that's what they were driving on.
Prescott was going to drive it, but they thought...
He doesn't go south of the river. Yes.
On being paid with a £50 note at the end of the journey, the cab driver asked the Duke if he'd got anything smaller, at which point Philip produced the Queen in person. Alan, whose bunker mentality was the death of him?
This is Martin Bormann. Is it the skull? They identified the skull. Not only that, they released 6 photographs of how Adolf Hitler would be if he walked among us now. There's wonderful ones of Hitler looking like an elderly rabbi and things with him bald and a beard and all the rest of it. But they've actually found a piece of Martin Bormann, and they know he's really dead.
Reaction to talk of abandoning the hunt for any more fugitive Germans was met with anger by some people. Despite a ruthless desire to impose their will on the people of the world, too many Germans have escaped prosecution, and the public are determined to bring them to book, said David Coulthard. And the scores at the end of round two are Francis and Jeremy 8 points, but Nick and Alan edged into the lead with 9 points. And we start round three with an ad spotted by Nevin McGee of Glasgow in the West Highland Free Press Situations vacant section.
We currently have a vacancy for a temporary weekend worker at our salmon farm at Loch Alsh on Skye. Applicants should be prepared to work outdoors, be flexible in their approach to work, and have an interest in fish farming. The ability to swim is also a distinct advantage.
Thanks for that. Francis, why could a Mars a day make you work, rest and go broke?
This isn't to do with the world chocolate shortage, is
yes.
it? Oh, well, there's some cocoa-devouring podule or something or other, some mite that is attracted to cocoa and is running amok in the Ivory Coast, I believe. And there was a great panic in chocolate circles about this, there might be a world shortage, but Mars, I think it was Mars, wasn't it, who put out a statement saying it was all right, there was going to be plenty of Mars bars for years to come, and Marianne Faithfull needn't worry.
In the Telegraph, the pest was called Black Pod, and I had the vision of this thing in knee breeches and walking backwards, banging on doors and saying there's nasty chocolate in it.
I like that 70% chocolate. That's lovely, isn't it? That 70% cocoa. Because if you get that milk chocolate, that's cut, you know. You want the really pure stuff. It doesn't mess you up quite so much. And they advertise that milk chocolate by saying it's got a glass and a half of milk. You know, I don't want a glass and a half of milk. If I wanted a glass and a half of milk, I'd buy some milk, wouldn't I? I want 70% cocoa.
The government has confirmed that measures to massively reduce Britain's chocolate intake so as to stabilise its price have been considered, but so far no country has shown any interest in taking Vanessa Feltz. Importers warn that massive price hikes could see the return of piracy to the high seas, with the captains of ships known to be carrying chocolate having a bounty put on their heads. Jeremy, your piece of music. Jeremy, why are the proms being anticipated with dread?
Well, because a gospel choir is going to be singing songs by Bob Marley at the proms. I hope not on the last night, because there's more than a little of the lynch mob mentality around with all the exuberant waving of Union Jacks and long white robes and pointy hoods, very much in evidence. Gospel singers will go earlier in the season before the thing really whips up into a frenzy.
Correct. The inclusion of Bob Marley music in the prom season is bound to come as a shock to the Hoorays and Henriettas, who form a large part of the crowd, most of whom think that Ragar is a game played by Will Carling. Proms organisers are hoping, though, that they'll warm to the sound of reggae. For example, songs like No Woman, No Cry will invoke fond memories of life in their prep schools. 2 points to Jeremy. Nick, who eats 7,300 eggs, works continuously for 8 years and grows 30 yards of fingernail?
Well, you do, for a start. And I do. And everybody does. It's a log of all the wonderful things we achieve. Like, we all grow 2 kilometres of nose hair. a night or something. I'm not quite sure. Some of the details were a little hazy to me. Now, whether that's at the same time as the 2,580 episodes of sexual congress that take place in an average life with 5 women, although again it doesn't specify whether it's with each of the 5 or, you know, spread across 5.
It's a terrible sort of aggregated thought, though, that it makes you glad you're a bloke, really, that these women have made love 2,583 times to a man with 2 miles of nose hair. And it's just a terrible peep behind closed doors.
And did you, the other one I particularly like is that a baby in the first 12 months of its life will dribble 146 litres of dribble. It tells you how much you wee in a lifetime too, but I've forgotten that one.
But that depends, though, doesn't it? On how much you drink and so forth.
Nope.
Not but everyone wees the same amount?
Yep.
That's hardly fair, is it?
It's a fact.
All these Muslims going to the pub having sort of a, you know, half a mineral water, and they still have to spend half an hour in the bog having a slash.
Yes, the average human being is said to have sex 2,580 times in their lifetime, or for however long they remain President of the United States. Alan, which 4 don't think everything's so fab?
Oh, it's about that poor sod George Harrison. He's been brought out like John Major, winched down and wound up and sent off to the High Court because thousands of years ago, in the 1960s, someone made a record of the original 4 playing something rather badly. And they're now trying to commercialise on it. And it's called Oasis.
Wasn't the other group called King Size and the Dominoes? That was on the bill that night at the Star in Hamburg. That's right. Yeah, and they recorded the Beatles in drink.
Jordan.
I think that's the point.
It's called King Size Jordan and the Dominoes.
Oh, I missed a bit out.
What is a King Size Jordan? Can you use it 2,583 times? Or does it get caught up in your nose hair?
It's not the first instance of a band taking a record label to court. Some years ago, George Michael split from Sony, saying he wished to handle himself from now on. The scores at the end of round 3 are Francis and Jeremy 12, but Nick and Alan, thanks to my cheating scoring system, still in the lead with 13. Francis, your piece of music. World in Motion, the former England World Cup song. And a hint for you there. Who'll be saying, no sex, please, we're watching the telly?
It's a survey, some bogus survey or other has been done, which shows that most men in this country, if offered the choice between watching a football match and having a night of passion with their dream woman would prefer to spend the evening watching Paul Gascoigne on television with six cans of lager and a takeaway vindaloo while the dream woman is upstairs with Paul Gascoigne.
A survey by the Media Business Group says that 95% of men aged between 20 and 34 would sooner watch the World Cup than make love to the woman of their dreams. That means that just like the England forwards, they're not expecting to score that often. The Sun said football fans would rather watch Alan Shearer even than have sex with Claudia Schiffer. So there's one German who won't be doing to Englishmen what their football teams have been doing to ours since 1970. Jeremy, what have the Brussels mandarins decided to ban, leaving toy makers with a huge bill?
Is this rubber ducks? Damage, change your sex or something? Damage your sperm count?
Yes.
I never. How do they count sperm? Do they sort of have to catch them and ring them? Have you seen them under a microscope? They skit about. I mean, they're frisky little pesky devils, aren't they? Apparently, if you suck a rubber duck, I mean in a nice way, obviously, your sperm count will drop and you will turn into a woman, assuming you're a man. If you're a woman, your sperm count will go up and you turn into a man.
Yes, plastic toy ducks, a soft PVC type which has been found to cause sex changes in fish, and it's feared in humans. I've been a toy duck manufacturer and father for 40 years, and I believe they're perfectly safe, said factory owner Mrs. Beryl Smith of Yorkshire this week. Nick, who's been told to bring their children up in a broken home?
The Brooks. Yes, I remember the Brooks. They've fallen out. They've decided to live in either half of this house and brick up the wall between them. But obviously, in the Goole local council regulations, something says that only 311 houses are allowed, the 98 houses or something in the whole village, and this will create one too many, and therefore they're not allowed to do it. And so the bricks have been sent back. I don't really understand why all that happened.
Fools. They decided to live in these two houses this way for the sake of the children. The children have parents who want to put a brick wall between it.
Yes, indeed. Divorced couple Mr. and Mrs. Brooke from Elstonwick, Humberside, have been told that their plans to block off a door which connects their two homes would mean the village had one house too many. Humberside Council told the couple they could have planning permission to convert their premises into eight houses if they agreed then to sell them all to a Mr. John Prescott, Jr. The couple's plea that we loved each other once but now a door has come between us has been rejected by Humberside Council as an unacceptable proposal but has been adopted by Norway as the title of their Eurovision Song Contest entry. Alan, who's rodent ranged far and wide in a rover?
Oh, this is terribly sad. This is Holly the hamster. Etta Carr. His woman was taking her child and hamster to school. I don't know, severally or separately. Immensely rich, probably goes to some tiny rodent college. Anyway, and it got out, ate its way into the glove compartment, then ate its way into the headlights, and by the time the police and the AA arrived, it was rattling around inside this car, so they dismantled it. But they didn't find the little pest.
Yes, it was three-year-old Eloise Short's pet hamster, Holly, who so far cost the family £1,000 by disappearing down the back seat of their Range Rover. Police say they're confident the hamster will turn up safe and well, but to be on the safe side, they've taken Freddie Starr into protective custody. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
This is from the newsletter of the Warrington Anglers Association. It's the secretary's letter, a word of warning to members. Considering the number of members and the spread of our fisheries, I expect I do not receive too many complaints from members of the public. However, there are three that crop up which are indefensible. The obvious one is litter. Second are anglers who appear to have no inhibitions when answering a call of nature, followed closely by members who push their poles into private gardens.
Jeremy.
I forgot.
Did you bring it?
I forgot, everyone.
You forgot to bring a clipping?
Yeah.
Oh, he's got a gentleman there's got one.
Oh, go on then, I'll have that.
It's like that moment in the test match, isn't it, when they sound the loudspeaker, has anyone brought a bat?
Better be good. I'm indebted to a man over there with glasses. And this is from Peterborough, but it's in today's Telegraph. We have it in London. I don't know why you brought it all the way from Peterborough. In fact, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but it's not a local thing, the Telegraph. That's why it tends not to have headlines like famine in Africa, no Peterborough people involved. It tends... but this is... I've never seen this before, so it'll be interesting. It says, a job to pray for from the Watford Observer appointments. Do you have God communication skills? That's terribly unprofessional, though, isn't it? Not to remember. I don't remember much anymore. I remember leaving the house. The rest of it's a blank now. Who are you people?
Nick.
I've got a cutting which has been helpfully provided by someone who may or may not be present, called George Marshall, and it comes from the International Tire and Rubber Association's industry update, obviously. And it says, one morning I was driving to work and stopped for a traffic light. I saw two government employees working alongside the road. One was digging a hole and the other was filling it in. Intrigued, I stopped to ask them what they were accomplishing. One government employee said, we're planting trees. It's my job to dig the hole, Ed's job to put in the tree, and Don's job to fill the hole. Ed's sick today, so we're just...
Alan.
Can't follow that, really. Anyway, Bradford Telegraph and Argus, Simon. Recent wills column. Said Mr. Roger Kavanagh of Ashdown, who died in January at the age of 79, left estate worth £337,300 net. The bulk went to his wife Mary, but there were a number of charitable beneficiaries, including the National Orthopaedic Hospital, to whom he bequeathed his feet.
And the final scores are Francis and Jeremy 16, but Nick and Alan still claimed the lead this week's winners with 17 points. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Mail on Sunday sent in by Barbara Lejeune from London.
Health officials in Dumfries have apologised for a computer error that sent Helen Guttridge a birthday card designed for two-year-olds with the message, brush your teeth every day. She is 102 and hasn't got any.
That's all for this week. Till the next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz this week were Francis Wheen, Jeremy Hardy, Nick Clark and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Peter Donaldson. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen and Tom Jameson with Felix Riley. The producer was John Rolfe.